Joining me for today's show is Tomer Azali from Clutch Points, Clippers beat writer. We've got a lot of NBA stuff to talk about. The Olympics are right on the horizon. Let's get balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I do it, say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny getting tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I am Adam King, your host, at Adam King on 91 on Twitter. Joining me, as I said today, Tomer Azali from Clutch Points. We've been working on this one for a while, but we got there. Tomer, thanks for squeezing me in and jumping on the show.
No, appreciate you having me, Adam. Thanks for being flexible and getting me in here. Appreciate it.
No, that's okay. We were just talking off air about the time difference, and it is it is bright and early here on Saturday morning for me, and Friday sort of evening afternoon for you.
Yeah, 2 p.m.
The Olympic opening ceremony was on 3 hours ago, something like that.
It just started 4 hours ago. Yeah,
4 hours. Okay, yeah. So I knew it was. I contemplated getting up at like 3:30 in the morning to watch it, but yeah, I'm not that into opening ceremonies. If it was sport, I probably would have got up, but opening ceremony, yeah, I've seen them before. So, although it did look as though it wasn't in a stadium. Is that right? It was held.
No, they went throughout the whole river, and I think they did it in front of the Eiffel Tower or something, if I'm not mistaken. From what I got glimpses of. Yeah, they're right in front of the Eiffel Tower with the Olympic rings on it. So, and it's pouring rain out there, so that must be fun.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go. Lovely France weather. So as I said, you work for Clutch Points. You're a Clippers beat writer and have been a Clippers beat writer for a number of years. Starting right at the top, I suppose. How was it that you got into sports media? Was it something that was always an interest and always a goal, or was it something you sort of fell into?
I think the way I fell into sports media is the way most people do. You try to go in that sport and you realize you're not good enough. And so you decide the next best thing is to just cover it.
Yep.
I played basketball when I was young, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can do this or that. And then as you watch people, you're like, oh, okay, they're much better at this than I am. And they probably will be. I didn't really like writing that much when I was younger. I didn't go to journalism school for it or anything. There was just a day where, you know, I think back in 2014 before LeBron came, I was just looking up an ad on there was an ad that popped up on Facebook with an opportunity to write for a website called Cavs Nation, which covered the Cleveland Cavaliers remotely, but it was more like a blog at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for that and didn't really think I'd get it, given that I didn't really have any experience writing. But I tried it. I went for it and got it. Slowly, you know, started writing, started doing some social media stuff here and there, developed a bit of a social presence. And then I think, you know, we really covered the Cavs strong to the point where we actually attended the 2016 championship parade for the Cavs. We actually flew out. We're all based in LA. We flew out to Cleveland, and just felt like a great environment to be around so many fans and actually cover the sports in person. And I was like, you know, it might be cool to kind of do this. Now, me personally, like, I grew up a bit of a Clipper fan, but like, I'm just a general basketball fan.
Yeah.
But I think growing up in LA, you saw the difference in the coverage that a team like the Lakers got versus like where you could find post game videos, quotes, this and that from the Lakers, but the Clippers was like really hard to find. You had to kind of dig deep for it. Maybe you look up the team website. So soon after that parade and after, you know, just seeing how the coverage kind of was, you know, the Lob City Clippers were the thing at the time, I just said to myself, you know, maybe I'll go for it. Maybe I'll just try it. You know, maybe I can, you know, I've had a couple years writing here of, learn some of the lays of the land, you know, not much, but I learned a little bit. And so I said, let me just dive into it and try. And it took me about maybe 8 emails before they finally got back to me, the team did. And I attended like a practice and, you know, I attended a couple of practices, then attended a couple of games. And I didn't, honestly, I didn't really ask any questions at the time. I was mostly just like observing, like what, yeah. How things were actually done. Again, I didn't go to school for it. So I don't have the, you know, the background in that. It's not like I can just go in and start asking questions. There's a hierarchy. There's a way that things are done.
Yeah. So
for a while, I actually didn't ask any questions at all. And it's funny, about a month into my coverage, I think Doc Rivers, who was a coach of the Clippers at the time, it was a shoot around we had the morning before the game. And there was probably me and like two other people. And the two other people that were there, I think they were like the LA Times and the Orange County Register. They asked like four questions each. I didn't ask anything. And I was just sitting there observing. And Doc looks at me, he goes, "Are you going to freaking ask anything or just stand there?" And so I was like, oh, he put me on the spot. So I asked him a question. It was good. It worked out well. So yeah. Doc really helped me kind of open up a bit. You know, when I was still observing how people were doing, he was just like, "Yo, ask a question, go for it." So, yeah, that's kind of how I got started. And I've been covering the Clippers now for what, 8 years? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 8 years coming up. So started in 2016-17. That was the first year I did. That was the last Chris Paul, Blake Griffin year. So, yeah, it's been a whirlwind. We've seen a lot of people come and go player-wise. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of good playoff runs, a lot of disappointing seasons. So no championship yet, but it's been a fun ride. I think more than anything, it's really fun to you know, not really a fan of the team like that anymore, but it's more so just getting to work with the players and the people around, just developing relationships and really getting to see the behind the scenes of things, you know, whether it's practices, whether it's all the work that guys actually put in, what it takes to make a game actually happen, like all those different things, I think are just the fun parts of it. Now it's, again, you do want them to succeed because, you know, if they have a deep playoff run, I have a deep playoff run, and that's better for me. But I think it's just, it's really just about relationship building. You know, I talked to a lot of the guys who were here back a couple of years ago, who aren't even on the team anymore. So, yeah, I think that's really how I got started. I know I kind of went on for a little bit there.
No,
yeah, pretty much how I started.
Yeah, no. Look, the more information, the better, I think. I mean, I just like listening to people's stories. And the Clippers, I suppose, as you said, they don't – well, not as much anymore, but typically 10 years ago, even 8, 7, when you sort of started, they didn't get as much press as the Lakers, and they were sort of LA's second team, that sort of thing. And I think that's sort of not as much the case anymore. And the documentary, the TV show that came out recently, Clipped. Did you happen to watch that? And like, was that, because I guess you were sort of on the inside, so you would have sort of been there when some of that stuff was happening. What did you think of that show? Like, was that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, I think it was similar to the Lakers show that came out a couple of years ago. It was I didn't watch it, to be honest with you, but I'd seen clips of it. It just felt like an over dramatic kind of representation of what happened for entertainment purposes, and you know, like, if it's something more historical or documentary based, I'll watch that. You know, I feel like The Last Dance, for example, did a pretty good job of documenting a lot of things there, where this one, the Lakers one, for example, really felt like it was more for entertainment. And that's fine. That's good for a certain audience. Just not for me. I remember at the time when that happened, that was just, it was just an unprecedented kind of whirlwind of events that happened between that breaking and then Adam Silver's press conference a couple of days later. You know, I asked Adam Silver, you know, when they had the Intuit Dome All-Star announcement, I was like, hey, it was almost a decade ago that you had to announce that ownership change would happen with the ban and everything. And, you know, he said it's been an incredible decade since. Steve has been an incredible governor, incredible ambassador. He's the biggest fan. It's all genuine, is what he said to me. It's really like, he's not drinking coffee or he's genuinely just that guy. And I think that was probably one of the better things to happen for this organization, because I think they're always going to be the Lakers' little brother, but like, I don't think people care about that. Like, the Clippers want to carve their own path, their fans want to carve their own path. Like, they really don't care what another team does. And you know, I think a lot of people throw that in their face, and I think for the most part, really, they're just like, we don't care. We just want to have a fun team. We want to try and compete for a championship, win a championship. And you know, cause when they win one, they're going to say, well, you have one and they have 16 or 70, whatever it is. Like, there's no point in comparing. There's really, people don't care like that. I think they just want to be able to have a fun team. Obviously, they have their new arena now, and really just go about their ways. Like, again, they were they've been the second team. They will be the second team forever. You know, I think when Chris Paul got here, Blake Griffin's rise, they really got a lot of media attention. But as they had playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment, that kind of dwindled over time to the point where we were like, okay, it's the same old Clippers by like 2015, 2016. So, I think they're really just focused on carving their own path. And that Sterling stuff it feels like a blur. And I'm sure people who worked around that actually behind the scenes will tell you the same thing. It happened for the best. I will say that because, you know, a decade later, they have their own arena. Branding completely different. Your actual like fans proud to wear the logos and the gear and stuff like that. So I think all that is not possible without Steve.
Yeah, and I think, you could say everything happens for a reason. And I do think that coming out the other side of that, from an onlooker's perspective, Steve and then Mark Cuban are probably the two owners who are, if you watch them, they genuinely just look like a fan on the sideline. And Steve's obviously always on the baseline there watching and always the most excitable player in the person in the arena almost. He's really into it and it does seem very genuine.
It 100% is. There's even a science to him liking to sit behind that. I asked him in summer league. I was like, why do you like sitting at that specific seat, behind the baseline? You might have a little obstruction with the basket. Like, why do you like sitting there? And he says, I like seeing plays develop. When you look at it up and down, you can see all five guys. You can see how a play develops and stuff like that. So, I thought he just liked sitting there because it was close to the bench, but he actually has a reason for it. And feels like it's the best thing. So, really goes to show you that he's actually invested. He's super interested in the game itself, which I thought was very cool to hear.
It is very cool to hear. And the new arena. I mean, what I've seen, which is limited, it looks pretty amazing. What have you sort of, have you been in there? Have you had the whole tour and that sort of thing? And what's it like?
Yeah, so the last time I was in there was a couple months ago. They weren't completely done with the arena yet. They did host a tour last week, but I was unfortunately in Las Vegas for Summer League, finishing up my coverage there. But no, I mean, I had a couple folks send me some clips and some information, and that arena looks like it's going to be absolutely incredible. I mean, from the Halo board, which is going to have as many stats as you can possibly think of on that board for each player, to the overall game presentation, the seating looks closer than it was at Staples Center or Crypto.com Arena. The leg room is going to be good. There's the wall, which is going to have all Clipper fans. It just looks incredible. I mean, the artwork that they displayed outside, the little basketball court, the big screen TV they have, the walkway over, it just looks like a really well-designed arena top to bottom. If I'm going to be honest, the media seats aren't as great, but I'm looking forward to at least giving it a chance and seeing what it looks like when you're actually in there with the environment. Because I will say some of the toughest parts of actually navigating through NBA arenas is getting down to the event level to cover, the post-game stuff right away in a quick second. So, but that arena looks incredible. I mean, there's no doubt it's going to be the place to be. If you want to watch a good basketball game with good game presentation and everything. So I'm excited for it. I really want to see what it looks like. And I guess we'll see here in a couple short months.
We will. And for those that aren't in LA or haven't been to LA, how close is it in relation to, I'm going to call it Staples Center because it's still Staples Center to me. So geographically, are they situated sort of close to each other or a bit of a distance?
So I think it's probably a good, I want to say 12 miles from one another. They're not that far from each other, but they're not that close either. And if you know LA traffic, they're about an hour away, probably about 45 minutes away. I will say it is much closer to LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. Than it is to Staples Center. It's much closer. Like, I think it literally might just be down one street. The LAX road goes straight into a street, and then that goes into the street that into a dome will be on. So it's much closer from that perspective. So I think teams will have a much easier time getting to their games from LAX to into a dome. So it's relatively close. It's not that far away. Like, I think for me, it probably adds another 10 minutes to my 45 minute drive, probably.
Okay.
That's my guess. It's an entirely different like direction. So I'm curious to see, you know, to learn the little driving patterns. You know, going to Staples every day for, well, not every day, but you know, three times a week for 8 years, you learn all the little tricks about the small streets that you can avoid traffic on and the best path. So I'm gonna have to spend this year doing a lot of research and experimenting on which streets are the best, to be honest with you. That's gonna be a big focus point of mine.
Yeah, seeing parts of LA you wouldn't normally see, so it'll be interesting. Yeah. So as you said, I'll just quickly jump back. You mentioned that this was not sort of the plan as such. So it was never from when you were young, I'm going to be in sports media. What was there a plan at any point? Like what was it that you had hoped to do growing up, or was it a bit of an open book?
I mean, like most high school kids who don't really know what they want to do. I don't know. I initially thought I wanted to go into medicine, and my best friend is you know, about to be a doctor, and the passion that he has for it was clearly not one that I had for it.
Yeah.
Even though I thought I wanted to do it, so that didn't really pan out. I don't know. I can't really tell you what I wanted to do, to be honest with you. I know I did some, you know, I maybe would have liked to do some TV stuff, some television stuff, whether it's, you know, broadcasting some kind. I guess maybe that is still, you know, a long-term plan, just kind of broadcasting or television personality or stuff like that. I don't know if I really had an exact plan per se. I think it was just, you know, let's just kind of ballpark a region, which, again, I was passionate about sports. I knew a lot about sports, specifically the NBA, like, you know, in Vegas, I'll walk by and tell you that this player, this player, this player, and they're like the 13th man on the Hornets or something.
Yeah.
So like it's a passion of mine, but, I don't think I had an exact, you know, idea of what I wanted to do. I started off wanting to do medicine, really wasn't it for me. And then, I just jumped into this, honestly.
Yeah. So away from this, away from sports, away from basketball, if and when you have free time, anything sort of specific that you enjoy doing? Any other hobbies that actually warrant your attention and time?
I mean, I have a dog, a little Chihuahua mix, so he takes up some of my time. Whether it's you know, the walks, the playing a little bit, the maintenance, like brushing his teeth or taking him to the vet, all that stuff. He's not a fan of those, so obviously that takes up a lot of time. No. But you know, that's my baby. I like playing video games. I'm a big gamer. I was a big gamer growing up. Team PlayStation, not Team Xbox.
Okay.
I used to draw a lot. I used to do a lot of drawing, whether it was like some anime stuff or cartoon stuff. I used to do a lot of that stuff. Drawing is actually something I wanted to do at an earlier age, but it kind of came and went for me. I don't know. It was a field that I was tough to get into. I remember doing like a Warner Brothers tour when I was younger of their animation factory, and I was like, oh, this is like really cool. And then, like, if you actually look at, like, for example, I went to see one, and they showed me what a Batman episode looked like. And it was like a book that was like, not episode, it was like 2 minutes or something like that. It was a book about this thick, and they just flipped through, and it was just like a, you know, it obviously moving animation, but it was like, it seemed like a lot. I think that's kind of where I lost that. I still like to draw from time to time, play video games, and my dog. I'll play basketball. I have an interesting show binging tactic that I do where I will not watch a show typically if it's under three seasons. House of the Dragon, for example, that's out right now, but I will not watch it until they have three seasons out. So I have a lot to kind of binge and watch together. So the reason for that is I watched Game of Thrones, and then I watched it before the final season came out, and I could not wait a year and then another week for every episode. So since then, I'm like, you know, I'm just going to wait and binge watch those together. Other than that, I mean, I got three of my best friends have kids here, so I'm always trying to see them when I can, be a good uncle. That takes up a lot of my time between, you know, attending, you know, driving to all these games. You know, I went to the finals, I went to All-Star, I went to Summer League. So, like, there's always things that the most of the free time is now during here in the off season. And so I'm trying to see, you know, the friends, kids, trying to spend time with my family, my dog, trying to catch up on gaming and all the, you know, the latest games that are out. So that's really the free time, because once the NBA season starts, it's exhausting. It's rewarding, but it's very exhausting.
Mm. Yeah, and the off season is, I feel like it's getting shorter every year. Obviously, time wise,
Paul George made sure of that this off season.
He did, indeed, he did. I'll quickly jump into TV shows. Any favorites? Anything that you've watched? And I'm a little bit the same as you. Like I hate waiting a week, and we get so used to being able to just watch anything on demand. And Breaking Bad was a good example of a show that I actually, not on purpose, it wasn't something I avoided for years on purpose, but I knew of it, and I think people were saying, watch it, you should watch it. And I think a couple of my mates said that, and I'll watch it. So I actually, it was basically when the last season was airing that I started watching the show. So I think I caught up sort of at the right point, but I got to watch the whole thing in about 2 weeks or something, 3 weeks.
So here's the thing. I grew up on 24 episode seasons. So if you have 24 episode seasons once a week, that I can live with, I can do. But I can't wait a year and then have 10 episodes and then wait a week for every episode. That to me doesn't make sense. That's too little. That's not enough episodes. If you have 24 episode seasons, that makes a lot more sense to me. Breaking Bad was one of those shows that I watched live. I did not binge, like wait and binge. I watched it live throughout. One of the most stressful shows I've ever had, even just week to week, theorizing what's going to happen next. So, like, I will say that aspect of it is fun. It's definitely fun. The whole waiting a year and then waiting another week, I can't do that. I can't right now. Favorite shows. I mean, I'm a big sitcom guy, honestly. Like, just those kind of funny, maybe silly, maybe a little corny shows. You know, Modern Family is a big one that I'm a fan of. Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, Friends, like those kind of shows I've watched a lot of. You know, I think some of the newer shows, obviously The Mandalorian was a really good one with the Disney show. I think Andor was really good. I'm still waiting on season two, like a year and a half later. This is the problem. I don't know. I mainly just go for a lot of like comedy stuff. You know, I'll watch the occasional action stuff, action movie. I mean, Rush Hour is one of my favorite like movie series. Yeah. You know, in Vegas, I just went to watch Chris Tucker perform his stand up, which was just a highlight. So, I think really just there isn't anything too specific. It's just like a general, you know, comedy genre that I really enjoy. I'm not a big horror film guy. I can maybe count two or three that I've ever watched in my life, if that. Not a big thing for me. I'll do some action stuff, but I actually have not watched a lot of like movies that I should have for my generation. Like, I didn't watch The 40-Year-Old Virgin until like last year. I didn't watch Step Brothers until last year. It's very bad. A lot of people my generation give me a lot of crap. I'll tell you one thing. So I had never watched The Matrix, actually, or any of those movies. And during the season, I was talking with Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard's trainer he's saying he's a big Terminator fan, Matrix fan.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, I haven't seen that. And he goes, you haven't seen that? I'm like, what's wrong with you? How did you not see that? Kawhi heard that. And Kawhi goes, you haven't seen The Matrix? How did you grow up? And I'm like, man, I'm not getting shit from Kawhi about this. Like, get out of here. Like, on the flip side, like his trainer, his security guard never saw like Star Wars, so I gave him crap about that. I'm a big Star Wars fan. Big Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I gathered that when you said you've Mandalorian and Andor. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm rambling at this point, but yeah, I think that's it's all over the place. It's kind of random. It's action. It's comedy. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yep. And I'm sort of the same. Like, I mean, other than the horror thing, because horror is my favorite. And I mean, I went to the movies on Monday night and watched two horror movies. So I sort of go and see anything horror related that comes out of the cinema.
It's so strange to me. It just doesn't. I don't see the point. That's the best way I can explain it. Like, I don't see the point. And like, I'm not to run on anyone's parade. If they enjoy it, two of my best friends love it. But they know if there's a horror movie out, they're going by themselves. I'm not going with them.
Yeah.
They know that. I just can't connect with it for some reason. I don't know why I can't connect with it. So
it's certainly not for everyone. Otherwise there'd be more of them. A little bit the same in terms of TV shows, like sitcoms. I just love having, I'll sit and I'll go, okay, what's a show I could watch? And I end up watching one of about five shows that I've watched multiple times. And Big Bang is one of those. I'm working my way through Brooklyn Nine-Nine again at the moment.
That show's fantastic. Love that show.
It's one of my favorites as well. The Office. I know that sort of back to front. Seinfeld, New Girl, Modern Family.
Watched Seinfeld last year for the first time.
Oh, for the first time. Wow.
First time ever. Yeah. I'm actually getting through Curb right now too.
Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking of getting into that. I did start it at one point and then I stopped for, I can't remember why, but.
It's awful the first two seasons. That's why. It's really bad.
Yeah, maybe it's that's dreadful. Why. Maybe.
And then my buddies were like, continue with it, stick with it, skip the season three. So I skipped to season three and that's where it picked up. But the first two seasons are god awful. I'm not going to lie. They were bad.
Okay, well, maybe I'll go back and I'll start at season three then. That might be a little bit easier. But I don't usually talk too much about basketball on these shows, but I know that you recently sat down with Donovan Mitchell because there was an article that came out in the last few days. And then you mentioned you just sort of sat down, had a thing with Jason Tatum as well. In terms of NBA players, any favorites, like in terms of players that you've interviewed and spoken with, any that stick out as just really fun sort of and forthcoming with wanting to answer questions and that sort of thing?
I will say the interesting thing, one of the things I found is like Kawhi Leonard is actually a very interesting guy off the camera. For whatever reason, once the microphones or the cameras are on, he kind of locks in. But he's like a very chill guy off camera. He's very cool. One of the guys that I've really enjoyed just in general talking to is, Nicholas Batum. He obviously just re-signed back here, but, just a good dude who's never turned down an interview. Always been super open and cool with me. I don't know if there's any specific. I mean, Tobias Harris is a really good dude. I know he gets a lot of crap on social media, but Tobias Harris is a really, really good dude. Anytime I see him, we're always trying to catch up on Dragon Ball Z and whatever we missed about that because he's a big Dragon Ball Z fan. Talk about the latest movie or anything like that. Anthony Edwards, I will say, is a fun interview because I don't even think he tries, but his personality just oozes out of him in these interviews. He just loves those, so he's a fun one. I don't know if there's any like specific guys that I can recall. I think there are guys who just have that personality and they're fun interviews. I think the first time I interviewed LeBron, I was in a press conference setting. It's the first time I was actually a little nervous. Like my heart was racing a bit and I was like, I've been doing this a couple of years. Why is this happening?
Yeah.
That's a guy like I grew up watching. So that was, very nerve-wracking at first, but he's a cool guy, great answer. Greg Popovich, I think, is another interesting one. He is capable of giving very, very fantastic answers and really open answers. You just can't ask dumb questions. He lets you know that. He lets you know that for sure.
I'm not surprised to hear. My friend, he went to LA, it was a few years ago now, and he got to go sort of not backstage, but he got to meet a couple of the players and that sort of thing. And he said his favorite two players that he just got some photos and got to shake their hand and have a little conversation. Tobias Harris was one of them. So not surprising to hear you talk about him. The other one was Montrezl Harrell. when he was
also a very cool guy.
You know, he said he was very sort of welcoming and happy to have a chat, that sort of thing. So, I thought that was interesting that he said those two. And I think he met, might have been when Boban was there as well.
Oh, so, Boban is a giant teddy bear. He one of the funniest moments I have was when his first year here, he walked by me and he's always nice, always daps you up, says what's up. He walked by me, tapped me on the chest lightly, but his hands are so massive that I felt like he palmed my entire chest and pulled something out. Like it's huge. I can't even explain how big his hands are.
Yeah.
And so walking by going like this was one of the most like, oh my God, this guy's massive. What the hell is that? Moments of my life. But Boban, anytime I see Boban, he's super, super nice, super friendly. I think Montrezl Harrell obviously always went out of his way for fans and gave them a nice time. And he was just as good with the interviews. I can't pinpoint too many guys besides that. I think everyone else not a lot of people like media. I think we're all kind of lumped into one. And people compare like myself. They'll think that myself and like Skip Bayless are all the same thing. And I'm like, well, it's not the same. One is a talking head doing it for entertainment. One's actually trying to build a relationship and put them out there in a positive light. Like, Donovan Mitchell the other day, I got to spend a couple of days with him at his camp, not far from here in LA. And just a really nice, chill dude. His mom was there. His sister was there. Just a really cool guy. You don't really get to know a lot of these guys and what they're like behind the scenes because you only see them in the jersey, and that's pretty much it. You may see them in the back for a few minutes, but not getting to see them, outside of their element. Is really good. Jason got to see Jason Tatum as well. He and Bam are like super close friends, and I watched them talk smack to each other about the Heat and Celtics series, and we would have won this if that. And it was such a fun thing to watch because like it's like the banter that me and my friends will have about teams, and they're having it the same exact way, and they're actually there playing it. They're the players we talk about like that, and they talk the same way about each other. So that's. That was another fun thing to watch recently. Just that they're fans too, just like us in a way.
Food, favorite foods. Anything that is that something that you can pinpoint that you have a favorite, either cuisine or favorite dish or anything like that.
I mean, I'm Middle Eastern and Indian, so those are my two dishes: Middle Eastern and Indian. I have gotten more into some Asian food of late. In Vegas, I found a couple of really good spots that, you're in Vegas for 11 days, you find the spots eventually. So, I think I enjoy some Asian food. Middle Eastern food. I'm not too picky. I will say I'm not a big spice guy. I guess that makes me a bad Indian. I'm not a big spice guy. I don't like really spicy food. To me, it kind of takes away from the actual taste of the food. So, not a big spice guy, but spicy guy, I should say. But no, I mean, I don't think I'm too picky. I think generally everything. I haven't really tried in too many South American cuisines. I haven't really tried anything there. So I'm curious to try those, I think. But I think for the most part, Middle Eastern is a big thing for me. Middle Eastern India, for sure.
Yep. And holidaying. I mean, you've already sort of alluded to the fact that you don't get a lot of free time between everything that you've got going on. But is holidaying something that you like doing? And have you got any sort of go-to places or spots you've been to that have stuck with you as a favorite?
I mean, I haven't been to enough. I will say... I went to Honolulu in Hawaii a couple times, and that is just an incredible. I'm actually thinking about going there next month, honestly, because it's been a long year.
Yeah.
That I would say is my go-to because it's a 6-hour flight, 3-hour time difference, easy little getaway. It's strange because it's obviously part of the United States, but it feels like such a different spot. Because of the people there, the food there, It's just so different. So I really enjoy going there as like my go-to kind of vacation spot. I would say Hawaii. I still have to travel to the other four or five islands. How many islands are? I think it's five. To the other four islands, I've only ever been to Oahu. But I know that I know all the. There's like a restaurant on the top and the northwest side that's really good. There's like a really good shaved ice spot in the north. I know a lot of the good food spots in the south. So like, I've been there enough times to know like I have to hit this place, and yeah, I think next time is probably exploring some of the other islands there. But yeah, that's probably my favorite one. I've never been, but I would love to go to Europe and especially Paris. Like one of my buddies is there right now and he's posting so much on his Instagram story. And I feel like I'm living through him in that Instagram story, whether it's, I think he went to Belgium recently and got to see like some of the castles and just the architecture is very, very fascinating to me. So I really enjoy watching that. And I think if I had to pick a place that I haven't gone to that I want to go to, it's definitely Paris, Europe, you know, Belgium, Germany, something like that.
Yeah. Paris at the moment would be pretty insane. We were there in September last year, and we'd been before, but it's just a busy place. There's people everywhere, so I can't imagine how busy it would be right now. Yeah, it would be hard to move. Given timing, and we're just speaking about Paris, I'm going to loop back in very quickly before I let you go to the Olympics. So we're recording this. As we said, the opening ceremony was 4 or 5 hours ago. So basketball kicks off tonight, today, wherever you are in the world. What are your thoughts on the Olympics? It's probably one of the closer groups of teams that we've had. US, I'm not a betting person, so I haven't looked at odds or anything like that. I would assume the US are the favourites, but...
Right.
I think one of about six teams could win it if things fall into place. And I guess, what are your thoughts on the US team? And then secondly, the challenges from around the world.
I mean, I will just say this. I know we're probably talking about the women's team should probably run away with this. The US women's team, they're dominant compared to the rest of the world. I think on the men's side though, there's been a lot more parity, a lot more stars coming up and better basketball being played. It's that one's tough. I still think the U.S. probably wins that one, but just looking at the list of teams, like Germany just won the World Cup last year, and they did it in pretty solid fashion. Like the U.S. didn't even medal. I know they sent their B team or C team, whatever you want to call it, but Germany was dominant throughout the whole way. I think Canada was very impressive, and they got Jamal Murray this Olympics run. So I'm curious to see what they look like. I forget who finished with the silver medal last year or the second place last year.
I think it was whoever Bogdan Bogdanovic plays for.
Serbia.
Yeah. So okay, Serbia. And that was without Jokic.
Yeah. I mean, Serbia had a great team. They got to the final without Jokic. So I would imagine they have a really good chance here as well. I think Jokic commands so much attention, even on the NBA level. So I'm really curious to see how he kind of dominates on the international level. Serbia is a dark horse because they're in the same group as the U.S. So if they're able to snag that first game, which again, by the time this comes out, we'll already know. But if they're able to snag that first game somehow, might be tough for the U.S. to kind of navigate their way out of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Australia is always really solid. I think Josh Giddey's playing for them this tournament. Mm-hmm. I always say like Patty Mills turns into like international Allen Iverson or something because
Patty Mills is
the greatest player I've ever seen. There was that game, I think, I want to say against the U.S. in like 2018 or something, 2019, one of those World Cups, where he just lit him up in the fourth quarter, took that game completely over. One of the most impressive kind of overall takeovers I've ever seen on the international level. So Australia, I think you can't rule them out. I think Spain lost a lot of their big guys from the last generation.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how they do. I mean, I think they always have a chance. Who else did I miss? I mean, France, the whole country. I mean, France is going to be really good with Victor Wembanyama. Like,
yeah.
I'm curious to see how that works, because they're really going to run out Wemby and Gobert together starting. So I want to see what that looks like. Nico Batum is one of my, again, like I mentioned, the guy that I really enjoyed covering. So this is going to be like a last run for him. Can they end it off on a high note? Give him one final, Olympic gold here. I don't know. But no, the U.S. has a lot of competition. I mean, we listed like five teams right there that have a really good chance. So I think they'll end up winning. They just can't play with their food. You got to come out there and beat guys. And I think teams that like to run will probably be, you know, a bit of their or teams that like to play in the half court, excuse me, are going to be a bit of their kryptonite, if you will. They'll kind of like break them down the half court. But on the flip side, they have some of the best half court individual one-on-one guys. Not some of, they have the best in the world. So hey, you need a bucket, get KD. Oh, KD's not able to? Okay, fine, get LeBron, who just took over like three games in a row for them. Oh, that all right, Steph Curry, go get, like, it's insane what they can do. So I think their best chance to lose, like for opposing team to beat them, will be in the half court, but that's much easier said than done.
Yeah, and you're right. There are a ton of teams that are coming for the gold, and look, Australia will be, I don't know, we'll be there, like we'll be pushing, but our pool is very hard. So we have Canada in our pool, and we have
Greece. Spain. I forgot about Giannis and Greece.
Greece are the other.
There's
team
another one right there.
So it's going to be a hard pool. We've got Spain first up, and I'd like to think that we could beat Spain because, as you said, they've lost. Well, they've lost the Gasols and they've lost Ricky Rubio, and so they don't have the depth and the high end sort of talent that they had for so long. But then Canada, as you said, got Jamal Murray, but they don't have Wiggins, and there's a couple other guys they don't have. So there's an opportunity there. And then Greece, I mean, it's basically, can you stop Giannis? Like at this point, he's the heartbeat of that team. So. And then that's just getting through our pool. And then, there's France and there's Serbia and there's the US. And it's going to be fun. And I'm with you. I think the US should win. And obviously they want to win because of, I mean, look at the names that they're sending for their team. So it's something that they really want to win after the last sort of failure, I suppose, when they did send that B or C team. And hopefully Patty Mills has got one run left in him for us where he can turn into that sort of best player in the world version of himself. But he is getting on a bit. I mean, he's not even really in the NBA at this point. He's there, but he's not really in the rotation. So, hopefully he can. He's just been saving himself. That's what I'm telling myself, that he's been saving himself. And
when I watch Patty Mills, internationally, I feel like every shot is going in. I'm not even kidding. Every Patty Mills shot feels like a dagger.
Yeah.
That's how I felt for like the last six or so years here, whenever I've seen him play internationally.
Yeah, I hope that's the truth. I hope it is. But we'll see. Like I said, when this is released, we'll know who won the gold. And look, I might get you on again at some point leading into the season to talk about the Clippers, depending on times and free time. Not that you'll have a lot, but we'll see what we can do, and maybe we can recap our thoughts on the Olympics and see if we were accurate or not.
Let me know. There's always stuff to talk about. This NBA offseason is not really an offseason. There's always something going on.
Not really, no. all right, well, I am going to let you go. For anyone that, follows along with fantasy, that's obviously my sort of domain is fantasy, but where can they find you and your stuff? And if they want to read your articles, where are we sending them?
You can find my stuff on clutchpoints.com. You can follow me at TOMERAZARLY on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to see me post about my fantasy questions or lineups and stuff like that, definitely find it on Twitter, because I always try to ask the people what they think about certain things. I'll ask you, though, since you're the guy. Who's the consensus number one player? Is it Wemby yet? Are we there?
Yeah.
Or is it still you?
It depends who you ask. So I'm actually about to host in an hour. We're hosting our first live mock draft for next season. And I know the guy who has the number one pick, and I'm pretty confident he's taking Wemby.
Wow. Is it 8-cat or 9-cat?
9.
Interesting.
I think people I think it's between Jokic and Wemby. I think they're one and two. I don't think Shea is really in that discussion for one or two just yet. And then Luka is that's sort of the consensus top four. I can tell you that based on and we've got so with at FBI we've already done 20, I think it's at least 20 draft only leagues. So we're starting to compile some data, which I'm going to get a hold of today or tomorrow. And based on talking with analysts and what I've seen, I think it'll be Wemby in most spots just because of the excitement, highlights, sort of
potential.
I mean, Jokic is so safe and so good that you certainly couldn't go wrong taking him. Wemby probably has a little bit more leeway in terms of, yes, he could finish number one, but he could also finish sort of number seven. Whereas Jokic, you feel like he's going to be one, two, or three at worst. So a little bit safer. But I think it'll be Wemby, and if he progresses the way he did last year, I mean, who knows
what he's done. Well, if I will be tweeting my fantasy, because I always ask people about that stuff. So if you want to, if you're not a big Clipper person or NBA person, you're a fantasy person, I'll probably post some stuff about that as well. Complain when a guy is a last minute scratch and I lose rebounding by five because of that. So,
yeah, that's fantasy, isn't it?
I was eliminated last season in the playoffs on 0.005 field goal percentage. I was like, yeah. come on.
I had in our industry league, industry pickup, so it's sort of a pretty high-end sort of league with a lot of people that know exactly what they're doing. And I drafted Wemby in that league, and Chet and Anthony Davis. So I had all three of those guys last year, and I ended up trading Anthony Davis at some point to get – I think I got DeJounte Murray and someone else. I can't remember who it was, just because I needed assists and that sort of thing. Anyway, I started off the season really poorly because I know a lot of my guards got injured. So I was blocks, I won easily, rebounds easily, field goal percentage was pretty good, low turnovers. So I'd scraped into the playoffs. First round of the playoffs, I lost by 4 rebounds and Wemby missed 2 games that week. It was week where he had an ankle or something and they just went, oh, no, we'll just give you a game or two off here. And if he'd played, I would have made it through. And I don't know if I would have won, but he'd been so good all season. And then he just missed a couple of games. But
love that.
That's fantasy. Fantastic. So anyway, I will let you go. I'll jump out as well. We'd love it if you could like and subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Jump over to our Discord server if you do want to be part of those draft-only leagues. And just our normal redraft leagues for the season, dynasty leagues. We've got well over 100 active leagues. So jump in, join our community. I'll be back with another analyst interview very soon. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.